And it's your turn.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, welcome, everybody. And I think I've seen most of you, but for those of you who don't know me, my name is Cynthia Escamilla, and I'm on the board of Org Design Forum. And I am going to facilitate today's conversation, community conversation, Democratizing Organizational Design with Donald Nagel and Mark Augusta. And so what we'll do is Mark and Donald have a couple slides that they're going to share to set the context of this case. And it's going to be a panel discussion. And so one of the little Zoom tricks that I'm going to offer to you, because we talked about how Tanya might be able to put them in the middle so they're panelists. But what happens is when people look at the recording, they only see those two people. So for those of you who want to put Mark and Donald in the center of your screen, you can click on Donald's screen and you see three little dots and you see a chat or a pin. So you can pin Donald. And that same with Mark's screen, you can see three little dots on the top right-hand side. You can pin Mark. And so that's how you can keep them at the center of the screen while the rest of the conversation's happening and still be able to see everybody else. So that's just kind of a little trick there for you. But what I'd like to do, I'm gonna hand this over to Mark and Donald to introduce their case. So those of you who saw the introduction, Mark Augusta has been working in org design for over 18 years. He's an internal consultant. He leads the organization org design practice and works with a lot of different functions within the company that he's in. And so we're really honored to have Mark here just really presenting his case and their experience. And then Donald, as you saw also, is very experienced, over 20 years of organizational design, working in a lot of different industries. He and I got to know each other a couple of years ago through Proco, just a consulting company that really helps with just a lot of different experiences and backgrounds. And really, Donald is just a great person and facilitator as well in org design process. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Donald and Mark to present. And then what will happen is I will take questions over chat. You guys can also raise your hand in the screen so that afterwards we'll just start the open conversation and panel. Donald?
Yeah, so Mark's gonna start. I'm gonna turn it over to you, Mark. Just if you can add a little bit more, I think they'd love to know about your operational background briefly, and then I'll start sharing the slides.
I'm happy to do that, happy to. And first, I just wanna say thank you to everyone for this hour of your lives and for choosing to be here and part of this discussion. I was reminded of a saying that's been in my head for about 15 years from Gestalt Organizational Systems Design, where the saying is, the difference a lot of times between 10 years experience and 1 year of experience repeated 10 times is often as simple as pausing to ask myself, what did I learn? Because you're here today, Donald and I have had a reason to pause and ask ourselves, what did we learn? And it turns out this work, which we'll overview, that we started 2 years ago this month, and we're really heavily involved in for a year, as the next year has transpired, man, there's been so much progress made, more than I was aware of and we were aware of until we had this cause to really dig back into it and understanding. So your presence has already been a gift to us, to the point that I want to pull the team back together and have them reflect on these questions too, because this approach continues to have an impact for them. So thank you for that gift. And Cynthia, thank you. Always found that when we get interested and curious and capable people together to talk about our experiences, we all learn a lot. And it's beneficial. So thank you for creating the container for us to be able to do that today. As Donald and I prepared for this, our hope is for you, for everybody who's participating, that you'll find value in this hour too, that maybe there'll be a new thought or a new idea that you'll get to explore, or maybe you'll be reminded of something you've known for a long time that hasn't been top of mind for quite a while, or maybe some adjacent ideas will connect, right? All the different ways that we learn. But we've prepared for this hoping that you walk out and say, wow, that was really worth my time, and it got me thinking about something that's valuable to me. So with that, I'll do a little bit, just a couple additive things on a large intro, but contextually, things that we thought might be valuable is I've worked at Franklin Templeton for 26 and a half years. I started back in 1997. One piece that might be most interesting is I started working in the business, not in organizational development, not that we're not part of the business, we are, but in customer service, which in an investment company is called the transfer agent. And so I spoke to customers every day, all day long, between 40 and 80, depending on how busy the day was. I got to learn all of our products. I got to sit in their seats and see what their worlds look like and what they needed and answer a variety of questions. So I bring that with me. After about a year of doing that, I moved into a training role in that same work. And I became interested in the question, which I think still drives me and may drive some of you today too in this work, which is, why do people do what they do? Why do we do what we do? And I remember where I was standing on the floor where I was observing a couple of people taking calls. And I thought, we can go to a room and we can train. And in the room, we can all get it right. And when we come out of the room, sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we do what we practiced. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes I do it 80% of the time, but then I don't 20% of the time. Why is that? And as people who work in organizational development, we know that the answer to why do people do what they do, there's a lot of answers to that question, right? And we're in the pursuit of those every day. And in this conversation, it comes into organizational design. Donald and I have been partners in OD work since 2010. And every couple of years, the forces that be bring us back together to tackle some organizational need. In this case, the opportunity happened to be an organizational design opportunity. And I'll pause there, Donald, if there's anything you want to say additionally to introduce yourself before we turn to overview the situation that you think folks might benefit from hearing.
Yeah. I've also, the only thing to add is my perspective is always holistic. I'm always thinking of people, process, org, technology, all the synonyms, and not strictly just org design, even when I do org design work. And I think we should get to it, Mark. I'll go ahead and put myself back on mute and share the screen.
Okay, let's put our first slide up, Donald, please. We only have four or five. It's very short as far as visuals. And the next one, please, the quote. I'll give you a minute to take in this quote. I came across this quote about 2 months ago. And as we were preparing for this discussion today, I said, yes, that's a perfect summary of what we believed and what we did. We just hadn't said it that way, right? That the people doing the work often see the challenges and the opportunities the best. And if we have methods to engage and bring them into the work, sometimes our outcome can be the most powerful. So let's go, Donald, to our brief overview of the situation we were working with. At Franklin Templeton today, I'll just give you a little bit of an overview. We are a roughly $1.5 trillion asset management firm today. Since I started working in 1997, I remember starting to work for a company that did a number of things, but was largely a manager and an offer of mutual funds. And many firms in our industry did that, focused on the retail mutual fund business. The second bullet there talks about industry change. It says disruption. It feels like disruption sometimes. It's definitely changed. Today, for companies like ours, in addition to offering mutual funds to retail customers, we also offer ETFs. We offer direct indexing, which through technology takes a leap and becomes custom indexing, where people can customize their own personal index instead of buying one off the shelf. We help people invest in private markets, private fixed income, public fixed income, private equity, public equity. We have a beautiful tool that's AI enabled that helps manage people's investments near real time to meet their goals. So not just picking a category of investment, but enabled AI enabled goals based investing. And these are just some of the things that we do today and that firms like ours do. And we package those things into custom solutions. So rather than picking things off the shelf, we continue to work to be adept at meeting people where they're at, meeting our customers where they're at, finding out what they need, and then packaging the different capabilities that we have in order to meet their needs uniquely and in a bespoke fashion oftentimes. To build those capabilities over the last 10 plus years, there have been partnerships, there have been acquisitions, there have been some capabilities like our active ETF line that we've grown ourselves and we've grown organically. Depending on the capability we're trying to add, sometimes there's a big lead time and it's better to partner or to acquire that capability. Sometimes it's a good situation to build it. When I started working, as you came to work every day, largely what we were doing was the same. And the focus, I could say, and not that we heard this in our ears all the time, but it was continue to be able to do this well, incrementally better, to be able to support investors and our investment products with scaled, accurate operations. And at that time, when we'd said operations, it was the three bullets at the bottom of the screen. It was fund operations, all the things that you need to price a portfolio every day and to buy and sell securities around the world. It was also technology for those purposes and for customer purposes. And then the place that I started, customer service. Around this time, when we started this work 2 years ago, the firm was really starting to pivot. That was going to continue to be a big part of our business. And on the horizon was what we're living today, a much greater capability enabled in part by technology to meet customers where they're at and to make things more user-friendly, more customer choice. And to do that, outsourcing was chosen as a strategy to help drive the business. And it's really common in our industry as well, where we focused on scale and getting the work done. Partners had gotten to the place where if they focused on that, we could share that work with them and we could retain a workforce that's focused on driving new capability, driving customer value, bringing new products online. Of course, every choice that you make has operational and technological needs, right? So today, the day-to-day production work of technology, the day-to-day production work of operations, a lot of that is done with partners that we've outsourced with. And then what we're focused on every day is driving our customer experience, driving the investment capabilities that allow them to invest as they want to. 2 years ago, this change was on the horizon, and that the movement of work was in flow, and it led us to the point where we started to consider, and our executive team started to consider, moving forward, what's next? We're going to make these big changes, and Donald, when we change slides here, we'll overview a little bit of the significance of that change, but we started to ponder what's next. So I think this is a good place, Donald, to add anything that I've missed and to move forward one in our visual and share your perspective, because this is where you came in when this pondering started.
Yep. The first comment before I shift slides is, and this may be familiar to many of you as you work with your clients, especially larger clients, the pondering was in some ways constrained by habit. It was constrained by what people knew. It was constrained by, we are really great at problem solving. We're really great at process improvement. We're really great at traditional project management. And when Mark and I got involved, it was clear to us that this was something new. This was something so new that those traditions wouldn't necessarily work in this case. So what happened was the chief of staff of the president of this part of the company that had roughly 5,000 people came to me and said, it's on our mind, what's next for this large group, which is really a set of technology and operational back office and mid off organizations. What can we do in that space? And I said, that's a great question. And he went further and said, we're really interested in what our org structure should be. And I spent 6 months periodically intersecting with that individual saying, I think your first question was more powerful, given what I understand about your context. Your second question about jumping straight to an org structure, less powerful. It's very tempting sometimes to go to what I'll call boxes and arrows and leaders, and then ask them to figure it out. And that works maybe in a traditional environment, then I got Mark involved and they said, you know what? We want to see what some external consultants say about it. So Mark, I'm going to turn it back to you as you share that part of the story, and then we'll segue to what you and I specifically did.
Yeah. My understanding is that we spoke to three external consulting firms. I wasn't a part of that discussion yet. And what we were embarking on was interesting to everybody and hadn't exactly been come across by others. And so while there was expertise there to be shared, there wasn't the type of expertise that we found that externally you looked for that, hey, I've done this before and I can tell you what the ropes are. It was clear that it would be a process of figuring out together as we went. And we're pretty good at that internally and in partnership of figuring it out ourselves. And so I was approached actually and asked in my team, hey, who do you know in the community that might be a good fit for this type of work? And Donald, you came immediately to mind. And so we started there. And so you were brought in to speak with them. And then you said, hey, I love to do this work and I'd like to bring Mark along with me. So our internal and external partnership that we found to be beneficial over the years could come to bear. And it really did. Yeah.
That's right. And I see in the chat, you know, Harris was talking about the combination of those two. And that's exactly what we were looking for, Harris, was not a big set of binders that would come in and tell. Instead, more of an interactive type of engagement. And what Mark's written there, rather than propose a solution, let's slow down and explore. That was a mantra we had over and over again with them. We use a mix of traditional techniques and the less traditional, at least in the circumstances I've seen in very large companies, of slow down. There's always this urgency to move and get to a solution. And we ask them to trust the process and to specifically go engage their VPs and directors and senior managers in this space. And something we very explicitly pitched to them and actually had them read the article was Heifetz and Lori's seminal work from HBR 20 some odd years ago. And we actually had a little book club with the president and the EVP and the SVPs, right? The direct reports about that article, and in particular, about the first two pages of the 2001 reprint that basically summarized the whole thing at that level. And we talked about the different behaviors that would need to be there by those individuals to support this approach. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the next slide, Mark, to briefly talk about it. I'm going to assume that some of you may be familiar with Heifetz and Lori's work, others may not. They were not explicitly org design experts in a super classical sense of the word, but the more change people, but it fits totally. So the first top of the slide is critical, this notion of adaptive challenges. They define an adaptive challenge, and Mark and I have taken a little bit of liberty with some of the words here, but this murky systemic problem with no easy answer. In fact, if you go to that third bullet, in hindsight, you realize you didn't even know the powerful questions to ask. The temptation to say, what is the best org structure to handle this shift is a straightforward, easier question. It's not necessarily the most powerful question, the most helpful question. So in the early days, when you're facing an adaptive challenge, it's about generating questions by people, generating their perspective on the situation, generating and sitting in and immersing yourself. And that brings us to that middle bullet, solving these systemic problems, especially when you don't know the most powerful question immediately, requires the work of lots of people just to immerse in it. And Heifetz and Lori talk about six principles. So for leaders, the most senior leaders, this first one, get on the balcony. I'm going to oversimplify again. The way we talk to the leaders at Mark's company is stay up out of the work, but frame the work, guide the work, reinforce the work, avoid the temptation to say, thank you, now go implement right now. And in a speed environment, an urgency environment, in a traditional space, a traditional problem, that's typical and that's beneficial. So we ask them to stay up on that balcony to observe, see patterns, reinforce. Number two, identify the challenge. And they kept coming back to, we're not sure the best things to do. We're not sure what the root cause is of some of the issues we're facing. We're not sure how to engage people in the most helpful ways. And in some ways, that was their challenge, knowing that they were outsourcing, that they were, as a result of outsourcing, reducing the remit of the awesome individuals who remained, and that in some cases, the remit was going to be much more strategic, which became a bit of a fuzzy word for some individuals. What does that mean? I used to be operational. You want me to be strategic? The third point, regulate distress, is where the leaders step in. And as people feel stress, they shelter them in a sense. They also prevent themselves from adding more stress to the system. Again, I'm oversimplifying, but being hyper alert to the fact that you're asking your folks to do things that you haven't typically asked them to do. And that could be a very stressful environment. Four is just maintaining attention to the direction that you're going. Five is a continued reminder. Almost anything they say or do will have value. It'll be a nugget, even if it's hard to see that nugget. And six is protect those voices. By leadership voices, they mean someone leading from any chair, someone at any level taking the courage to offer something. It could be a negative perspective, poorly worded. With this group of leaders, really, it was around number one the most and number five, those two. And I would posit that in your work, whether you're an internal consultant somewhere or an external consultant supporting internal consultants, that you may find that any one of those six, if this approach worked for your situation with your internal or external client, any one of the six might be a place to emphasize. It's not a case that you have to give equal time and energy to all six. So Mark and I chose consciously that one and five were the most. Mark, anything to add before I go to the, I think we may have one more.
Nothing to add.
No questions. No. One more is questions. So Cynthia, I know we were going to turn it over to you. You were monitoring chat. You also had one or two questions to pose to Mark or me just to get things moving.
Yeah, absolutely.
And come then, off and stop sharing.
Yeah. Feel free to stop sharing. Yeah, so we can... But I do have a couple of questions, but I want to open it up to the community and just open it up for questions here at the outset. What questions do you have for Mark and Donald? So thank you. That was really compelling. And Jim, go ahead. You're on mute.
Got it that time. So you mentioned their opener was, or they were interested in organization design. What was the problem that you resolved to an adaptive challenge that they perceived?
Mark, I can run with this one. They perceived, Jim, that we are downsizing by roughly 40%, that the standard hierarchical guidelines about what makes an SVP an SVP, a VP a VP, span of control, size of teams, that they were ready to run that engine, Jim. And it became a standard sort of HR structure span. We think this is what we need to do, but is there anything else we need to do? So that's how, that was a simplified version of how it presented, Jim.
And what would doing so have fixed for them? What was in their mind as the problem that they were trying to solve? Was it a problem of implementing something or a problem of achieving an outcome that implementing those changes you described would fix?
Yeah, let me offer too, one Donald. Thing and then turn. Yeah, go ahead. You got an idea, Mark?
Yeah, I was just going to say, and you might differ. I don't think you would. As I experienced it, Jim, and it's a great question. I didn't experience that we started with a problem. I experienced that we started with an awareness that the operational landscape we're in is about to change significantly. We need to be part of driving and changing that. And literally, word for word, the question that was asked is, what's next? So we know, right? We've been built to operate known things at scale with increasing efficiency as work comes in. One big known thing, we need to probably be great at 15 known things, and 10 of them don't even exist yet. And it's even better if we can help create them. Sure. And so the opportunity to drive value in the business, drive value to customers, to be early to market. Those are the types of questions that were top of mind. I don't even think there was enough detail yet to feel the kind of precision that names a problem, right? We want this, but we don't have it. It was more of a, we need to get over that horizon. How do we tackle that? Which is why the adaptive approach seemed like such a good fit, because we need to get all moving in a direction. Wouldn't it be better to have 2,000 people interested in this question than seven? Making daily decisions in their work that advance us and add up.
Yeah. And Mark, if I can, those first 6 months I was chatting, Mark was not involved yet. And they were focused on, I'll try and paraphrase what I just said. Hey, Donald, what is the best org structure, given that we're going to be 40% smaller and given that we've outsourced a lot of key operations? That was their problem, Jim, in a sense. And I was hesitant to go there. I wanted to get to where Mark just got to, right? And through the spring and summer, they got there themselves eventually, right? They talked to external firms and they realized there's something nagging here, that an itch we have to scratch. There is, and the language Mark started using about possibility, about future evolve. But initially it was, can this just be a quick org structure engagement? We bring you in halftime, you work with a couple people, you're done really quickly. Will that work, Donald? That's what they wanted to solve, Jim, because they knew they couldn't keep the heavy hierarchy over 40% fewer staff.
Yeah, and maybe to your question, Jim, too, I think that's how people know, you know, we learned this in training, people ask for what they know how to articulate, right? So we're always doing some translation and say, I hear you asking this, I'm choosing to think you mean this. So let's give that.
Great. You guys, this is so exciting. Okay, Andrew, I'm going to choose Andrew, and then there's a question in the chat for Molly. So Andrew, I'll have you ask your question, and Molly, and then Wendy, I see your hand up as well.
Yeah. So my question was, I was surprised to hear you say, one of you said halfway through, oh, we have to slow people down. There seems to be this, you know, when these, all these large companies, this, you know, this, this thing to be urgent all the time, you get things done urgently all the time. I hear that a lot in large companies and I experience the opposite. So I'm just kind of curious to hear more about that. I Donald, with what you just said about this idea of staying in the question mode and staying in discovery, as it were, as opposed to saying the solution is an org design, that's really important. But I would say I really struggle with the opposite, which is sometimes I provoke people by saying, and they say, oh, it's going to take us a long time to do this organizational change, if that's what they're talking about. I kind of go, well, Elon Musk, you know, got rid of 40% of people in Twitter in 3 days. Like, maybe that wasn't the ultimate solution, the great way of doing things, but like, it shows things that can happen a lot quicker if you really want them to. So I'm just kind of curious about this speed idea and wondered if you had any more thoughts.
Mark, I know you've talked a lot about this internally with people during the engagement. So why don't you take a stab at that?
Yeah, and you know, if there's a question, I always have thoughts, right? Andrew, the thought that comes to mind for me is right or wrong. When we know what we want to do, we can act swiftly. And so in Elon Musk's instance, I would assume he had clarity of this is what I want to do and why, and we'll do it. And in many instances, we act with equal clarity and equal rigor and speed. And in this instance, this was really work. It seemed like the nature of the work is discovery. We're here to learn some things that we don't yet know. We're not in a position yet to say what it will look and feel like on a daily basis to expertly support 12 product lines instead of one main one, many of whom are new to us as a firm because we've joined together in a more bespoke way in different countries around the world. We don't know what that will feel like. We can't name what needs to be done just yet, but we can name the direction. And so that's what comes to mind for me in this instance that made it a really good fit. And interestingly enough, the main executive, the chief executive that we were working for, he's a fellow who likes to move fast, right? As you would expect, right? And in this instance, he too had a much greater openness and willingness because it was evident. I think my inference is it was evident that we're the value here is to learn about the direction. We could learn by picking direction, putting a lot into motion, seeing what works and didn't. But that's a greater cost, it felt, than pausing to learn purposefully. Donald, what would you add to that?
No, that was good. Nothing.
Good.
I know we've got more questions, so
thanks
we should
the question. Yeah. Go with Molly and I'm aware, Cynthia, too, that we were just prepared, this may or may not come up, for the question of like, how did you go about that? So I'll just say that out loud in case that's on anyone's mind, because
okay.
I know we
let you
didn't
do that,
say
Mark,
that.
And then
I don't need to. I don't need to, but if it's
no, that's
a question,
okay.
Let's just keep rolling. This is great.
Okay, let's keep rolling, and then we'll get to like, how did this all happen? But so Molly's question was, so as the roles and the behaviors changed, you know, where did the leader struggle the most?
It's a great question, and one that I work on every day right now. When we ended up unfolding a process where we engaged with the senior team, and then we engaged with a cross-functional group of 20 people sitting in different key parts of our technology and operations areas. And we asked them the same questions we asked the senior team. We worked in pods, you know, groups of five, and then we rolled the data up, and then we had group conversations. We really wanted to grow the shared understanding of the situation, even though I might be on a different continent working in a different business unit. Is it similar? Is it different? They identified a few key areas they felt were going to be opportune. Leadership approach is one of them. Mm-hmm. And their words and their work helped us see what that shift would look like. I'm going to say, in my experience, and I support organizational culture, right, Cynthia? That was on one of the things I support, is the belief system. Shift in culture and the shift in individual belief system, what it means to lead in an environment that is one here to execute in a disciplined manner on a repeatable basis, the shift to, right? And what that requires, it requires, I need to know my boundaries. I need to know my role. I need to stay in it. I'm in HR, same thing for us, right? The new world requires us don't accept those boundaries. Don't wait to be told. You bring the value and try to influence upwards, right? So that shift from an environment where people lived, I'm here, I got my skills, what do I need to execute, to I'm here, I've got my skills, I actually need to drive and influence other people to see what I see to create the greatest value, no matter my seat. Even if I tried that in the past and it wasn't super welcome because that wasn't what the game was about, that shift is, I'd say, the overarching statement of what's been the biggest, and then multiple things under that. A lot of direct work in these groups about their culture change and how they want to show up. A lot of articulation of behavior, a lot of noticing and rewarding people doing the new things and the right things.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Is that a sufficient picture to reply?
Molly, that was your question. So I'm just going to have.
That was terrific.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and something to add, Molly and Cynthia, to what Mark just shared is that where I saw some of the more specific struggles were when the folks we were talking to said, well, I know what we need to do, right? For example, we need to honor what our direct staff are telling us. What does that look like? We need to listen to them. Okay, great. What would that look like different from today? And they could articulate that. And then we check back in with them a month later and a month after that, and a month after that. And in some cases, zero change was happening. And it was because they were being driven by what, like, I like to call, none of them use this phrase, the tyranny of the urgent. It is this kind of company, and I'm sure you see it, there is so much happening minute by minute by minute in this environment. It's a 24/7 global environment. Many of these leaders are accountable 24/7. Even when they're going to sleep, they're still the accountable person. And they wake up to a flurry of emails, sometimes 100+. So it's, and in a sense, they're being a super senior individual contributor, Molly. Yeah. And yet, and so they don't have time to pause in what Mark just talked about. So I'll pause there. There are other things going on, but they they had to confront that. And when Mark said, hey, when preparing for this meant we could go back and talk to more people, they were finally, many of them finally getting around that corner, but it can take time.
Yeah. And so Molly, customer attribute or attributes like as a leader, really understanding how to empower our teams and truly create that feeling of empowerment in our teams becomes really, really important. People becoming wide in our understanding about the business so we can understand the context and we can make and suggest decisions, you know, versus kind of having that context held high and then action being described. Those are some examples of things that are shifting and shifting very intentionally. I appreciate your question because it even reminds me of how intentionally we've been shifting that and how far we've come. 2 years isn't a long time. In fact, 1 year really since some of this was summed up. And so thank you.
Good.
You know, thanks. Cynthia, if it's okay if we jump ahead, Jim's question is exactly.
I want to get to Wendy's question. So
oh,
I want
sure.
to
go ahead.
To
Sorry.
Wendy, and then we'll get to, yeah, we can jump ahead. So, Wendy?
Yes. Let me just switch on my video. I don't know if you can see me.
Yes.
Welcome. Can you see me?
Yeah.
All right. Good evening, everyone. This is Wendy from South Africa. And yes, I have three sort of areas and issues that I would just like to ask, you know, the panel, and they're around basically the idea of co-creating, right, a solution or a structure with the leaders or with the divisional heads. I find that sometimes they, you know, when you come as an org design, you know, consultant or specialist, they expect you to have the solution sometimes, you know. So tell us, what must our structure look like? So I just want to, how do you upfront sort of put that idea to say it's not about me just coming with a solution or a structure? What is that process looking like, right? How do you set that foot right from the beginning? Because I believe in co-creating definitely with them. Mm-hmm. And then with that also, then there's something, you know, a time period to that. So another thing, I mean, the gentleman just mentioned now that leaders don't always have time, you know, there's a rush and there's deadlines, which I understand. But again, what is that timing? What is that period? How long does it take to do a typical exercise? Obviously, I guess it depends on the company, the function that you're looking at, but just where would you spend most of your time, right? So setting the groundwork and where would you spend most of your time to ensure that you then do due diligence to the work that you're doing for your company, be it small or big. I'm in about 3,000 staff company, so it's not as big, but quite complex. Thanks. Mm.
Thank you, Wendy.
Mark, I can take a stab at the first half of what Wendy asked, and then you might want to add more, and then maybe you could run with the second one also.
Great.
Wendy, this is going to sound overly simplistic, but I was direct with the chief of staff. If you would like to engage me, mm-hmm. I propose you bring in others, and I'm not going to give you an answer.
Okay.
Donald, and we're going to go talk to these other firms. And I won't name the firms, but all of you will know mm-hmm. these firms' names, and they all charge more than $1 million a month, right?
Yeah.
They all made giant presentations, and the leaders were not wildly impressed. And because they were just like, okay, I'm not sure that structure that they were being told in a pitch deck would be a great structure mm-hmm. is going to work. And they came back and said, well, you know, yeah, we'd like to engage you and our internal team. And can you just tell the answer? And I'm like, no, you guys have. So part of it, Wendy, was I was just in a space where I was willing to tell them, I know mm-hmm. all of you, you have answers in your head. Mm-hmm. It's not like I had that advantage. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was able to say, I believe in you. And I believe that with some immersion, you will be there. So it wasn't just a flippant no, it was a, it will be something that emerges. And if you guys spend the time on this, it might emerge quickly. And if you don't have time to spend on this, it might take quarters or longer to emerge. But I know your direct reports. I know their direct reports from that 10 to 15 years of relationship. There's a ton of smart people here, and they've worked with a ton of consultants. They have ideas. So if you're willing to do that, Mark and I can help.
So it sounds like what you were doing is creating an environment or an invitation to co-design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said, Mike.
Yeah.
And they finally, and Wendy and Mike, they finally were like, let's co-design.
Yes. Okay. So be upfront. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wendy, what I would add to that is I have the luxury of knowing I don't have the answer. So that's not even an option. I can't tell you what you should do. But Donald, something that you said resonated in my ears, relationship and trust are a big part of that, right? So when we know somebody a bit or more than a bit, the strength of position to say, look, there's nobody who knows this situation better than you, the people who run it. What I can promise you is I can help you find the answers within you and your teams. If you believe that answers lie there, we'll be a great partnership. If you believe that there are no answers there and you really do need somebody to tell you what to do, lovely, please find somebody else. Because I know I can't give you an answer personally better than the ones that you have. And I can say that with honesty and conviction. And a lot of times, sometimes there are other people who've crossed this river before, and there are people who helped them, and they can tell us how to cross the river. They're a great fit in that instance. That is the right application. If we're learning something new, though, then I think this is a good fit for that application, and that's how we've approached it.
Good.
I think what you're also doing by following a path of co-design is increasing the likelihood of successful implementation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you involve, so what I do in most projects, I then ensure that the stakeholder grouping is quite wide and involves as many people as possible. Even employees themselves sometimes, you know, having sessions with them, asking them what's working, what's not, because then I feel like they're also part of that. Yeah, it's just that when they do want, not everyone, but when they do say, okay, what's the solution, then it's, you know, it's tricky. But I think I hear what you're all saying. So thank you so much for that. And just maybe a last one from my side before I move on, just on the numbers. I sometimes still struggle with the numbers. So you mentioned you're going from 4,000 to about 2,000. What tools or frameworks or methodologies do we use to say what numbers we need? Sometimes they'll ask me and say, I had 10 processes and now I need like 5. How do you know what numbers you need on that structure? Is there tools? Is there, where can I go for that direction? Because I've always had that. So sometimes I'll read about ratios and things like that, but it's different. I mean, you know, depending on the function you're on. So how do you then handle something like that?
Yeah, I know those are questions that were deeply considered and very, very complex. I personally wasn't a part of that decision-making at work. So I wouldn't even be able to say, I don't know, Donald, if from your general experience, if you have any ideas, I don't have any.
Yeah, I can add a tiny bit, Mark. This is something the company is really good at. So this is a straightforward traditional question. And they had a extensive project team working with each of the outsourcers, and they didn't all happen in the same month. This was spread out over a long period of time. And they, part of it is budget, Wendy, and what the outsourcer wants to receive for doing the work. Part of it is learning and asking your team, what's the work that remains? And they had multiple project managers with a program manager with many large spreadsheets. And they tried ratios, as you're saying. They tried a variety of things. And then in the end, they said, we're going to learn. And we're going to go back and forth between us and each of the outsource partners as we dial in on what's the appropriate number. So there wasn't a show up on a Monday and it goes from X to X minus a certain amount. It was adjustments over time in the situations.
Yeah, and also likely in a very participative way, informed by a lot of people, not just information. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Cynthia, I'm looking back at Jim's question again. I'm hanging on to it so tightly because, Mark, I don't know if you saw that in the chat.
You can go back to Jim's question, yes.
Yeah, this is something that Mark... you know, when we had our 4 or 5 level offsite, which had never happened before in that company, Mark, this came up. What is the role of a people leader? And the people who were invited in, because a traditional offsite would be a boss and their staff and maybe some guests. We had four levels at least, which had not happened in this part of the org. And that took a lot of risk. And people were, do you want me to open my mouth? They asked us behind the scenes. We're like, you were invited. You're a peer. I'm not a peer. In this instance, please, you know, you're, and this role of a people leader and the culture that we want that leader to, that just became what, Mark, 30-40% of the 2 days together out of thin air practically. So let me turn it over to you, because, and I know you've worked with that ever since.
Yeah.
Well, and but I want to interrupt you a little bit, because I think it goes to Anjan's question as far as the issues of org structure and the power, you know, as far as where they are in the org chart. So how did you like create space to like talk about that, you know, kind of the areas that needed to be talked about, especially with people that might be personally or materially impacted by that feedback or decisions?
Yeah. How do you're asking, how do we create space to have that conversation? Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great question. And over the years, and even not that long ago, I've been in a discussion like this, and I don't know what the key is. I've just always found that when we show up to an honest dialogue, people show up honestly and openly. It's just always been that way. And I don't know if it's a wonderful, healthy part about our corporate culture. I don't know if it's how we show up as facilitators. I do know, like Donald said, we had many levels, multiple levels in this conversation. And there were a couple questions like, can I really speak openly in this discussion? And we said, absolutely, because, and we did at the beginning, right? Donald set the tone that, look, we're here in the pursuit of answers and information that lie everywhere. Please leave our titles outside the door. We are interested, capable humans, or we wouldn't be in this room, and let's show up that way in pursuit of this question. And everybody just did. And in fact, even, you know, in a couple instances where folks thought, gosh, I might not feel comfortable saying this, turned out they did. And where folks said, I'm not sure they're going to be comfortable hearing this, it turned out they did, because that just the tone was really set that we are in pursuit of the question. So I think if anything, probably facilitator preparation and presence and belief and probably a willingness to intervene if we stepped outside of that, but we didn't. But maybe it was sensed, right? I think sometimes as facilitators in these discussions, we do that. People get a sense of, you know, hey, the people facilitating, they really mean it. They've got us. We can be honest in this instance, or we can't. So I think our facilitation, not like as a credit thing, but I think the tone we set has an impact on how people feel they can show up.
Mark, good. In service to the people on the call, let me add, we did some mechanical things in the 5 months prior to the workshop. And believe it or not, it was 5 months. So when Mark referenced having 20 additional people involved, we asked these SVPs to nominate their direct reports, who should get involved. And a couple of them went down one more layer. We worked with that group in three separate sessions, all at virtually, right, because of COVID. And it took them a while to say, do you really want us to be truthful just to you? Mm-hmm. There was no power structure dynamic anymore because the other guys weren't even in the room. Are they going to listen to this? And we're like, they are. And you'll just have to see it when you see it. You'll have to trust us, right? They knew Mark and me. And we're like, we have a relationship with you. Please do it. And it still took three meetings to draw it all out. Mechanically, so three meetings, we also typed the notes as we heard them and gave them back to them initially. And they saw we were typing their dramatic statements. And we said, we haven't shared this with anyone yet. How do you want to edit this? So we gave them agency, right? And most of them didn't want to edit it once they saw it. And we did not attribute names. Instead, we clustered the comments with no names. And then by the third meeting, we said, we're going to go over the main points, and we made it interactive. So they moved and had the final statements. Then we let them know, this is going to go to your bosses and your bosses' bosses and the president of the unit. They're going to read it, absorb it. None of you will have names to it. They know it's a collective. We had two sessions with the senior leaders on that document. They acknowledged almost immediately, yeah, these are the hard truths. Yes, yes, not a surprise. And they dug into it. And then we went back to the group of 20 and said, they acknowledged almost immediately we were in the room. One of them was like a dual person in each group. She's like, I was there. My peers acknowledged immediately. Keep moving. And so those mechanics help build. But notice this was over a multi-month period with three different sessions and shifting from catalyzing them to giving them agency. And then we said, we are going to propose to the senior leaders that they invite four or five or six of you. Are you guys comfortable with that notion in the abstract? You know, yes, okay. And then the invitations happen. So all that was a build. And so you can do those types of mechanical things. They have to be situationally appropriate. I'm not convinced Mark and I are such awesome facilitators that if we went straight from nominate to show up, because yeah, this was a giant power differential. So I'm really glad, Cynthia, you highlighted that from the chat. And yeah, it took everything I said to begin to get past the power differential, and it still showed up in the room. And we still had to facilitate around the power differential.
Well, and there's also, this is so fascinating. Thank you for sharing this. This is like, I'm just, my mind is kind of like swimming with ideas. The other point that was brought up in the chat was the diversity in that power differential. So women or, you know, kind of, again, diverse groups. Did you have that, knowing that there is at certain levels, kind of was that purposeful?
Yeah, Mark, I think I'd love to hear what your thought. I think it was purposeful, but even if it wasn't, there was a lot of diversity.
Yeah, if you had been a fly on the wall, you would have seen visually an incredibly diverse group by gender, by race, by background, by country of origin, by location, right? It's all in the room. We didn't specifically pick for that. That's, I think, a byproduct of what you get when you work in a diverse organization, right? So when you have leaders in different positions, our need was to work with the leadership of different groups. It turned out the leadership of different groups in our organization happens to have those attributes, right? I don't know. It wasn't our selection criteria, but absolutely it's what it looked like in the room. And it was great. It was great. Also, one of those moments we've all lived where people start to see what each other are naturally good at and rely on them for that. So the person who's great at summary, everybody turns to him and says, hey, what's your story? What are you hearing? Because they know they can summarize. The person who's ahead of everybody else on tech said, I think we can edit this document real time on MS Teams. Let me show you how. So everybody turned, we included, turned that over like, great, you lead us. You're ahead of us. And so we had everybody in the room and three people on the line, you know, 15, 16 people co-creating a document and solutioning together. We didn't even walk in thinking we were going to do that, right? But we recognized, here's the strength of this person, let's run with it. And that just naturally happened throughout.
Great. Okay, so there's 5 minutes left, and this is flown by this time. And I just want to ask just a final question around what's next, right? So what did you learn, Lynn, like what's next for you guys on this project?
It's interesting. What's next is different because we've spoken today. After we had solutioned and chosen a few things to experiment with, let's experiment with these topics. Some were quick changes that made a material difference in how things work. Some were more longer term things like a cohesive plan for leadership expectations in this new type of environment. We had an ongoing stand-up call for people who had taken the responsibility for these things. Every 3 weeks, let's get together and have a stand-up. That stand-up still lives today. It's not as frequent, but it happened just a couple of weeks ago. And there was just a few of us that attended this one. And I'd asked them, hey, let's reflect on where we started. And what are you working on today? And it turned out that almost everything that was named this period, probably 18 months ago, is moving forward materially, has been solutioned, is in a new state, or has progressed, and you can see what's coming next. And it was really neat because the people who were on the call, who were in two different divisions, two different locations, different coasts of the country, didn't particularly know this, each other when we started this work, they plan arm in arm now. They wouldn't dream of prioritizing between operations and technology without making sure their resourcing and downstream resourcing is all aligned. And they had this awareness in that last call that, holy cow, we really have made a ton of progress. We didn't even notice it because of what became evident to them, they acted on. And it didn't feel like a thing. It wasn't on a slide. They didn't report it out in a meeting. They just did it. But it made the change that was needed. And so they were energized and put another, we got to bring the group back together. So Cynthia, what's next? I walk out of this, I'm going to pull the entire group together and have this type of reflection, lead this type of reflection for them, at least give them the opportunity so they can see how far they've come and then talk about what's next. I think there's a tremendous amount of inertia that's there to be noticed. It's felt in part. I think it'll be magnified and people will really be energized by it.
And what I'll try and make this 30 seconds, Cynthia, to add to what Mark was saying, all of that happened without a traditional program and project management structure. Because the people the people who wanted to do it finally realized they could do it. So they tested their leader's statements. And the leader said, great. And they, when Mark said material, he is understating. There were a couple changes that the company had been looking for in some fuzzy way for years, had nothing to do with org design. But because of this group coming together and saying the challenges are not necessarily structure. They might be. The challenges are how we engage one another in different behaviors, different roles, different microculture, so that we can move faster. And they've proven that the one. They've proven that they don't get they get rewarded for that, right? And the reward is keep going. It's not a monetary reward. It's keep going.
And Cynthia,
that's kudos to Mark and all his peers.
Thank you. If I could add one last statement, the really interesting thing, looking back, all the things they noticed, they were right. They were right about all of them. There was not a single hypothesis that hasn't borne out or that was inaccurate. They were right about everything and they've moved on a lot of it.
That's so empowering. So, you know, guys, so we're at time and I want to thank you for such an engaging conversation. And I hope everybody here who's attended found it just as informative and engaging as I did. So thank you to everyone who was here. I'm going to conclude the session. And again, Mark and Donald, thank you so much for being here and providing us with great feedback and input.
Welcome. Thanks for having us. And I genuinely hope it was helpful to everyone participated. We appreciate your presence.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So folks, I'll send out a note when we've got the recording posted and I'll stay on the line here for a moment or two because we do have some new participants. If you have any questions, I'm happy to help out with any answers.